Friends, it is very unusual for me to use the privilege of this pulpit for the purpose of addressing current events. In fact, I avoid doing so as a matter of discipline, and I solemnly advise the members of the sermon group to do the same. There are at least two reasons for this. The first is that there is simply so much else to say that is more important and more urgent. The Christian faith is not easy, it is not obvious, and in the 12 or 14 minutes you graciously give me once a week to speak of it here when we gather together, there is a lot of ground to cover. But secondly, we tend to get our perspective wrong when we presume to speak to these questions. Often my colleagues in ministry will speak of the need for prophetic preaching, by which I understand they see this moment as an opportunity or a responsibility to pronounce on issues of the day. I struggle with that. I struggle not because I don't think we Christians have a deep and legitimate stake in those issues, because we do. But because I think the Christian gospel offers a critique of every position taken in the mundane world of politics. None of them should get an endorsement of being called the Christian position on anything. And anyone who claims that label seems to me to deserve a healthy dose of skepticism. Now, let me acknowledge that you might well wish for a preacher who would dive into these headlines more readily. And I must be honest with you in saying that I doubt I will ever be that preacher. There are surely times, as Bonhoeffer said, when silence in the face of evil is evil itself. But I think those moments are rare. And when they come, what distinguishes them is that the stakes are spiritual, not political, and the scale is social, not individual. And yet, this morning, we have a reading from the Epistle of James, given to us by Laura, that pretty much demands a turn toward the public square. Here are those words. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Where do they come from? We live in conflictual and disputatious days. We are swimming in a tide of contention. We are surrounded by disagreement and division. It isn't just that our candidates disagree with each other. We expect that. But the character of our public discourse these days is itself casting us into contending camps. The 1%, the 6%, the 47%, whatever it is. Those who would lead us are dividing us, alienating us, estranging us from each other. Now, James does not invite us to jump into that debate by taking sides in all of this disagreement. Instead, James is asking a different question. Why? Why all this disagreement? Why all this division? Where does it come from? What are we fighting about anyway? James does not pose the question without a pretty direct and pointed answer. When I find myself carrying with me, as I listen to all of the debates and all of the commentary and all of the interminable advertising, it is the idea that what lies at the base of all our contention is our self-focus. What lies at the heart of our divisions, James is saying, is our envy. It is our focus on the things we lack instead of on the things we have. It is our fear that everything we desire comes only in finite quantities. Not just money, but respect, dignity, safety, security, affirmation, acknowledgement, reputation. We want more for ourselves, so we must deny it to others. So that when candidates talk in the language of division, they find in us a ready audience. And that is our failing, not theirs. When we allow ourselves to be trapped in this kind of thinking, we are failing our calling as Christians. We are in that condition described almost 100 years ago by Yeats. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. So how are we supposed to live in this contentious world? What are we being called to do in the midst of our fractious civil discourse? Through the ancient perspective of the Epistle of James, I think we can see our current circumstances in ways that give us a program of action, a set of basic principles for finding our way through the thicket of contention and division. It is that we should begin from a perspective of gratitude, not grasping. We should live as gifted people who are called to share our gifts. And we should look with expectation toward a world transformed by the law of love. To begin from a perspective of gratitude means to reshape our lives around the idea that what we have does not come from us. It comes from God. It is not just a sweet line that we used to say at the time of the offering. Remember it? All things come of thee, O Lord, and of thine own have we given thee. Not just a sweet little sentiment. It is a statement of belief. From the Christian's perspective, the world is not divided between those who earn their keep and those who fall into some kind of shiftless dependence. As the phrase of the week has had it, the earners and the burners. From the Christian perspective, all of us, in the end, all of us, owe everything we have to the goodness and graciousness of God. All of us are dependent. And so the right way for us to go through the world is not to begin from the perspective of measuring what we don't have and deserve, but of being thankful for what we have received, because we deserve none of it. I learned from someone sitting in this room that a lot about your life could change if you just made your contribution to the church out of the first of your paycheck instead of out of the last of it. I tried it, and it's true. It turns out to be exactly right. There is more than enough when I approach it that way. Second, we Christians are gifted people. We have received the gift of reconciliation with God. We have received the gift of adoption by grace. We have received gifts of talent and skill and education and health. All of them come to us undeserving. And those gifts do us no good whatsoever if we try to hoard them. They only help us if we give them away. That is the one basic reason why you cannot be a Christian alone. Being a Christian means being in community, giving to and receiving from that community, dealing with all of its ups and downs and disappointments and triumphs. It means we can only realize the full measure of the gifts we each have been given by investing them in the people we have been given and in the community we share. Begin from a perspective of gratitude, not grasping. Live as gifted people called to share our gifts. And finally, look with expectation toward a world transformed by the law of love. And now I'm going to tell you a story. Exactly 30 years ago this year, apartheid was still the means of dividing people in South Africa. And the South African Council of Churches, an ecumenical group of black and white churches from all across the country, they became the target of a government-sponsored inquiry designed to silence the protest of the churches against state-sanctioned racism in that country. Desmond Tutu. All of us know he would later become Archbishop of Cape Town, but in those days, 1982, he was the General Secretary of the South African Council of Churches. And with Peter Story, a white Methodist bishop who was the president of the SACC, Tutu was dragged in to testify before this judicial inquiry to defend the activities of the churches in demanding an end to the injustice and divisions of apartheid. The address that Desmond Tutu gave that day became one of the documents quoted in his citation when he received the Nobel Peace Prize. But he began his words by putting the whole miserable evil of apartheid firmly in its place by saying this: I want to emphasize that what we speak of today are thoroughly political and thoroughly mundane things. It wasn't that the church had no business speaking of them. It was rather that the church had an authority so broad that mere politics was only a part of its remit to teach God's vision for ethics. Now, there's more to this story. Not long after Desmond Tutu began speaking, a buzz went around the gallery in the room, and into the audience walked Robert Runcie, then the Archbishop of Canterbury, together with representatives of the World Council of Churches, the Lutheran World Federation, the National Council of Churches in the United States, the World Methodist Council, and the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. Can you imagine? It was almost an unprecedented demonstration of Christian unity, something we pray for every week and rarely see. And it was simply and silently to lend support to the proclamation that the church's business is the work of transforming the world by breaking down the barriers we build to separate each other with the transforming power of Christ's love. Our ancient teachings call us in this current moment to a new and dangerous place in these broken times. They call us to stand in the place where it is hardest to be. They call us to stand in the middle, in the place unswayed by vituperation and vitriol. They call us to stand in the place where we can give a hand up to people who are struggling and be a voice of restraint on the unfettered concentration of wealth and power by some. That is the place in the middle. It is our call to find a new way to live out our ancient identity as the via media, the middle way, trying to be the best and living out a conviction of God's loving purpose in the world. May God give us grace to answer that call joyfully and effectually.